Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Public Bar, where we're out and about for a Friday field trip. Grant and Danny on the Fan, thank you for making the show part of your day. We are sponsored today and every day by our friends, the law firm Kondori & Murad.
They are the exclusive sponsor of our show. They can help you draft your last will and testament, set up a living trust, or put together a medical power of attorney. Schedule a free consultation with their attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to let them know that we sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
About a half hour ago, my wife sent me a text. It was a picture, and it was a photo of an ice cream truck. Not like the one that comes to our house sometimes that gives, you know, the ice cream bars through the window that you pay a couple bucks for. Like an actual soft serve Mr. Softy.
The Mr. Softy, yeah.
Blue and white ice cream truck, which are very, very hard to find, but they're increasingly more difficult to find in October, I would say. And so she sent me the picture. She's like, oh my gosh, look at this. And I jokingly was like, you got to follow it. Like 20 minutes later, I get a text. They finally stopped. We're getting ice cream. They followed the truck.
What
all around the Northern Virginia area.
What a play. They're like flashing high beams at it to get the pull over, like signaling.
Well, that's what I said. I'm like, how do you get them to stop? She's like, well, eventually they have to stop. It's an ice cream truck. I'm like, but you don't know. That could just be Betty's car. Betty's just driving right to the DMV today. She's not doing ice cream today. That could be your vehicle, right? If it's like a family business.
I suppose, yeah. I mean, you might have some indicators whether you're selling ice cream, you're hawking it or not. But, yeah, you're right. I mean, it's so elusive where it's just – I remember once – it has nothing to do with what you're talking about, only barely – where I was trying to return an item before, like, things were automated, before Amazon made stuff easy. And they were like, just find a UPS truck. I'm like, what? Like, this was the advice
of
the person.
That was what you were told to do.
Find a UPS truck. And I have the package, and I couldn't mail it at the local whatever thing, and I couldn't mail it at this. And I'm like, I want to return this bulky piece of crap air conditioning thing that didn't work. And I literally flagged this guy down. Like, so unsafe. You know if he's getting carjacked, if it's like a Goodfellas thing where it's like, we know who you are, now you know who we are, but we know who you are. Give me your license. None of that stuff. I was like, they told me I could give you this. And he's like, yeah, no problem. I opened the truck up and I handed it to him.
It's just normal for him.
I go, this, I just want everyone to know this is so unreasonable.
Well, if that's a normal practice, which seems insane,
yeah,
then there's got to be an app where, like Uber, you see where all the trucks are at any given moment. So you can follow them around. Probably not the safest thing either, but if that's a thing,
yeah,
where someone is telling you, a professional saying, yeah, just go find one of the UPS trucks out there, then what about a track the UPS trucks app where I can go meet them at South County High School?
Yeah, it would happen better now, but like in 04 when this was all going down, I'm like, what a bizarre piece of advice.
But along those lines, so my wife can't be the first person to have ever done this, that sees the ice cream truck. She goes, oh, that'd be fun to get soft serve ice cream with the kids right now, and just follows the truck. Normally, it's a very ominous, scary thing. It's perilous if somebody's following you. Like, I turn left, they turn left. I turn right, they turn right. And over again, they keep kind of this, I'm like, oh, my God, someone's following me. So if you're an ice cream truck, do you never get to have that anxiety? Do you never get to have that fear? Because by the nature of what you're doing.
Yeah, of course they're following me. They want my ice cream.
You have to assume. But what if it is a bad guy?
Oh.
What if they are following you and you're not allowed to have the same sirens in the back of your head going off that the rest of us have because it's just normal practice that you assume they're a good guy who just wants ice cream.
I hadn't even thought of that because that's actually a very good point where it's like someone's going to think, oh, that's an easy mark. The ice cream truck, they probably got a little bit of cash. I can get some ice cream for my trouble. Oh, man.
It'd be a very different version of the town.
Yeah.
If the opening credits are like Ben Affleck, like, this is Marshall Clarence. He's 44 years old and he's about to get robbed. He's like talking about the guy that's driving the Brinks truck.
Good humor bus, frog of us,
right, exactly.
And a couple ice cream pops, some bomb pops, and he's about to get robbed.
He's like, this guy sells 42 bomb pops a day, 4 vanilla splits with banana, you know, and he's like, and he's about to get robbed.
He's about to get robbed.
I mean, that is tough.
The Town too.
I need another The Town. Sneaky, unbelievable movie. I can't even say sneaky anymore. Because everybody knows.
Does it sneak? I don't think it sneaks anymore.
Well, there was a time where I think I thought The Town was great and nobody else did, so I said sneaky.
Mm.
It seems like it's now crossed the threshold into everybody loves it. There's a couple famous lines. Whose call we taking? That get referenced and memed all the time. It's just so good. I also think Ben Affleck. Now, this is sneaky. I think he's one of the best actors on the planet. Directors on the planet. Actor, fine, good, solid, whatever. Batting averages aren't much higher than his. There's a couple guys, like Christopher Nolan, who might have a higher or better batting average. I'm not even convinced of that. I'd have to dive deep into that. Not a big Interstellar guy. Maybe that's a hot take. There's been a couple of those swing and misses for him. I'm not talking about acting. Look at Ben Affleck's movies he's directed, and you find me a bad movie that he directed.
He hits bolts. And I actually think that's one of his best acting performances, too, by the way, in that particular movie in The Town. But You want to go to our movie guys like Darris and Ryan, see what they think of it?
Yeah, I'm sure. Best picture, by the way, Argo won the best picture. I reference that a lot, but I haven't watched it in a while. That is a 2-hour bubble guts, edge of your seat inducing. Oh my God, are they going to get out or not? Perfectly done drama that he cooks up, and it's a nonfiction story in a sense. It's documentaries, and then there's whatever that is, right? But
it's a fictionalized telling of real events.
He's so good, man.
Yep, very good.
So if he makes it, I will watch it. All right, one thing before we get back into the Commanders that I wanted to hit on here. So we started the show talking about Al Michaels on the call last night of Thursday Night Football. And this is not a gleeful thing. I think people act like we love to Joan. We like to do some bits about, here we go.
Yeah, bits are done.
The lowest energy call ever at the end of the game.
To win the game.
A 67-yard field goal for the Super Bowl.
Here we go.
All right.
And it went through the yellow bars. That's the final game of the season. Like, yeah, we like to have a little bit of fun, okay? But I don't take glee in the fact that the game is moving forward, and our guy Al Michaels, who's in his, I think, maybe 81 years old or something like that, is one of the greatest broadcasters ever, is trying to keep up and having a hard time. But I will say, I hope we're all this lucky. I thought what I said on social media yesterday was pretty correct and obvious. I was just like, man, here's a couple of calls. Watch them for yourself. These are pretty unacceptable at the highest level. You would think that I was telling people Santa Claus is a jerk and that he really did hit the person on 34th Street. You know what I'm saying? Like, you would think I was going after the Easter Bunny or something. Some of the comments I'm getting, some of the vitriol and the anger from people, like, he's the greatest living broadcaster and still on top of his game. I didn't even know this was a thing.
Oh, yeah.
That people are still Team Al Michaels right now, this second, as we sit here today, as one of the best in the business.
Because when somebody's got deposits in the bank, people don't update their files. I always say nobody reads corrections, right? Like, the initial thing goes like wildfire, and then like 7 people will retweet. They're like, actually, we got that wrong. It's the opposite. Nobody cares about that one. It's the first one. You've got it in your mind. This is the person that's commenting on you. That, correctly, by the way, this is one of the great broadcasters ever. Because he is. Because he is. If there's a gold jacket for broadcasters, put him in one. Whatever color it is, put him in it. All-timer. All-timer. If there's a Mount Rushmore, he's on it as far as I'm concerned. Right? I mean, one of the greats to ever do it. It's also 100% true that he's lost his fastball. But it's like you're not allowed to say it because he is one of the greats.
I think that's kind of where I'm at. And I don't even like being the guy to point it out. But you're not allowed to acknowledge it. So what do we do then exactly?
You have to play pretend.
I'm watching the game. We're all seeing the same thing. We can all hear it. We can all tell. This was an amazing thing 5 years ago, 10 years ago, 20 years ago. Go back and watch the Santana Moss against the Cowboys 2-touchdown game from 2004 for the Washington Redskins and his calls of the miracle on Monday night and watch now. It's not the same broadcaster. But you're not allowed to say anything or you're a jerk or you're a bad guy. All I'm doing is calling balls and strikes. If I call a game, I would hope that people would say, dude, you sucked on this. We're allowed to do it with everybody else. People have no problem telling me what they think of Bob Carpenter or Kevin Franzen or Joe Beninati.
Mm-hmm.
Why can't we do it with Al Michaels? And to some extent, I tread lightly because he is much older, and I don't like the idea of, like, ageist is the term or whatever, but, like, just, you know, taking shots at the much older broadcaster. But I'm treating him like I would treat any other play-by-play person. Here's what I know. On Monday nights, we get Joe Buck. On Sunday nights, we get Mike Tirico. On Thursday nights, we get Al Michaels. Those are the three guys calling the three network-level games. Two of them are on top of their game doing an exceptional job and add to the telecast. The other one, time and again, makes the game worse for me. Makes it less enjoyable. I'm not allowed to say that. We just, and I'm a jerk for doing so. We're all just supposed to just, I mean, and by the way, this is not a charity. This is $1 billion operation.
That you just got the only.
He makes $15 million a year to do these games.
That was the point I was about to bring up, is that this is not some sort of Make-A-Wish charity type situation, right? It's the highest level we got. Right, so it always drives me crazy when I'll go down that road. I'll stick on this one. The idea that
I just looked it up, by the way. Sorry to cut you off.
It's okay.
Al Michaels originally made about $15 million annually on a 3-year deal for Amazon Prime's video Thursday night, which equates to roughly $1 million per game. But the financial details of his new year-by-year agreement starting in 2025 have not been disclosed. So he was making $1 million a game. We now don't know what the new deal is, but I'm assuming
it's not less.
I don't think it go down.
Yeah,
you know,
I bet you they re-upped after the success of it. Yeah, but I think you said it. I get it. I've seen this enough times. We talked about this yesterday to a degree, where if somebody says something against the thing that you love, it you cannot handle it. Cannot handle it. The hockey fans are calling for Ben McDonald's head, and he's got to like explain himself. Same thing here, where somebody is not particularly good at this stage. He was one of the greats of all time. Not the same caliber now, and I think that's okay to say. Doesn't change his career. Nobody remembers that Willie Mays was a Met. You know what I mean? Like, he's still one of the great baseball players of all time. We don't have to talk about the Met years as the entirety of his career. Michael Jordan, on bad knees, you know, was still averaging 20 a game for the Wizards. Nobody thinks about his Wizards years when they talk about his greatness correctly. You know what I mean? Like, this is okay. We don't have to remember this part. We can do all of the great stuff on his resume when, you know, his time on this earth is over. We'll remember him correctly as one of the great broadcasters of all time. It's also okay to say now, not as good as he once was. That ain't crazy.
On Ben McDonald, who you just referenced, for people that didn't see it. So he got into hot water. They're doing a rejoin, basically, a promo on ESPN. We talked about this on the show a couple of days ago. He's working with his buddy Kevin Brown, who he does O's games with. Kevin Brown knows he's not a big hockey fan, so he just did this promo for ESPN's hockey coverage, opening night coming up this week. And then he kind of puts a ball on a tee just as a joke for Ben McDonald, saying, hey, do you think Florida's going to three-peat this year in the NHL? Thinking McDonald will no-sell it and they'll move on. But he goes further. He not only makes it very clear he doesn't like hockey, but then he goes, I won't be watching 1 second of any of those games. And then Kevin Brown, to try to save him, because he just did a dumb thing that no broadcaster should do. You know, this is a $1 billion TV deal for ESPN and the NHL. He's like, sure, you'll be watching. The games are on this network, Ben. We've got them all on ESPN, so we're all watching. Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Ben McDonald, who's, you know, from Louisiana and eats crawdads and hunts and you know, watches LSU baseball, was like, not me. I don't care. I'm not going to watch 1 second. Just kind of a funny thing. Hockey people got upset. But I tell you all this to say this. Did you watch at all yesterday? He made so many hockey references during the broadcast. There was someone put a compilation together. Very well done. So like a catcher made a stop behind the plate on like a bouncing ball. He's like, that was a heck of a butterfly save there. Like very much subtle. Didn't take away from the game.
Good for you, Ben.
But I thought, like, he clearly, I think, either got a little help, because I don't think he's a hockey guy.
I don't think he is either.
Just went, you know, jotted a few down to use, but he worked them in. I thought it was actually a perfect jab back.
That's brilliant.
He wasn't going to make it about himself or kind of make this a story or go back at hockey people, but just to kind of say, I got you. You know, he would go butterfly save or kick save there by the catcher. And a couple of times, you know, just a hockey term. They need a line change.
Yeah,
here,
that fork ball is like a forecheck in a way.
Right.
Was it, Ben?
It was pretty well done. Yeah. All right, last one on broadcasters. So Mad Dog Russo sometimes has a tough time with names.
Mm.
The Yankees yesterday beat the Red Sox in a Game 3 to move on out of the wild card round. It's the first time in the history of baseball that we had three win or go home games in the postseason on the same day. The pitcher for the Yankees is this kid named, you got to be careful here.
Yes.
His
Just
name is
really enunciate this.
His name is Cam Schlittler. Okay, you can get in trouble on broadcast radio if you botch that one. That is Cam Schlittler. He is 24 years old, and he is electric. Yesterday, 12 strikeouts, 8 innings, one of the best outings by a rookie starter early in his career ever, pitched 14 times this year before the playoffs. Well, as you'd imagine, it's not as easy sometimes when our guy Mad Dog gets going, and he's trying to say names, speaking as fast as he does. We might have to blurt it out. I don't know. Here's Mad Dog.
Against the Red Sox to advance. Let me start here, and then we'll get into Schlitter, who obviously was Schlitter, who was just tremendous in the game.
Was he?
Schlitter. Nope. And then he came back with one that Darius had to bleep out. That was a hard T at the beginning of that.
Schlitter, who was just tremendous in the game.
You're going to have to go back to the well on that one. You got to be very, very careful with Schlitter.
Yes, you do. Especially if you're a guy like our boy Mad Dog, who scuffles. He put that one in the microphone glass and came up with something you can't
say. As a play-by-play guy, that would be really hard, though.
Yes, it would.
You can't, like, it's easy when we're having a conversation about the Yankees and we're going, Schlitter was really good last night. You could pause and kind of think it over and pace it out. I mean, there's times where you're Dave Jagler, you're on the call, fastball, Schlitter's got him swinging. You're just mid-flow, man. At some point, you're going to have to operate with some pace. This is an offense that doesn't huddle. You know,
yeah, this all happened fast and furious.
Cliff Kingsbury's calling the plays here.
The danger's on that. You guys heard the story by now. A kid from Massachusetts grew up in the shadow of Fenway Park and, you know, pitching against the Red Sox in the postseason, throwing every other pitch at 100 miles an hour. It was just electric to send the Yankees to the divisional series. But that's the perfect thing. I want more of that somehow in Mad Dog's sphere. I just want to make him have to talk about difficult to pronounce things. I struggle, but I feel like it's funnier when he does.
All right, so we'll end the conversation on Al Michaels here. It's like this guy says, lighten up, Francis. Al Michaels isn't that bad. So what is the inference there? That, like, I'm pacing around my house and then I won't be able to sleep tonight because I'm so bothered by his performance? Or am I just going, hey, at the highest level, this isn't good enough? Like, that's too far. That means I've got to lighten up. So what is the alternative? What can I do? What's a reasonable amount of questioning the quality of the broadcast at this point?
I think his answer would be you don't get to question it. His answer is not that bad is perfectly fine for one of the three primetime games we get per week.
But I think there's two types of people, right? There's a lot of people who don't care that much about what's being said on the broadcast or the quality of the performance of the broadcaster or the play-by-play call. I'm not one of those people. If you go to a movie and you just want to laugh a few times at a comedy, but you don't care about the actual film and any of the, you know, aesthetics and what the shots look like and the acting and the dialogue and the script and any of that, that's fine. I'm not going to sit here and act like I'm, you know, the Academy giving out an award, but I'm not a director. When I watch a game, I care about that role. I care about that performance. I think there is a lot of us that are that way. Not everyone's watching and Kendrick Bourne catches a ball and it's a botched call and they don't notice it because the only thing they know is they're one step closer to their FanDuel parlay. There's a lot. I don't know how many, but don't you think there are plenty of people that care about, like, otherwise, why is everyone always so negative about broadcasters on games if you don't care? I think there's a lot of people that notice when someone's not doing a very good job.
Totally. I am not one of those people generally. I'm usually not moved one way or the other by it. I get irritated at analysts more than I do some of the play-by-play guys. To me, it's background noise a lot of times, or I'll have it on quiet for a million reasons. So I don't care as much as some, but it doesn't mean I don't understand that a lot of people do.
But,
do you know what I mean?
Let me ask you this about last night. Can you get through those calls without being distracted or noticing? Like, the two that we played where he is just unaware of the – he's like, what is going on? Why was this 15-yard penalty assessed? Because it was a 13-yard completion and a 15-yard roughing. It's 28 yards. We're on to the next. Couldn't figure it out.
Yeah.
Or the play at the goal line. The fumble happened. The 49ers have the ball across midfield going to take their picture in the other end zone. And he's like, I think the ball's out.
Like he said at the same time the referee did. You know?
That's not at this. Yeah. That's not. That hindered your experience zero?
Very little. Just because, again, the child is asleep. Not too far away, and the volume's down low, so I actually didn't even notice it in real time.
Well,
but in general,
I'm saying if you're watching the game at volume 17 and you're watching and listening and seeing everything, you wouldn't say that call ruined the experience for you by a little bit.
No, it's not ruined, but the point is I understand the angst. I understand the point that this is something we should take a lot more seriously, and you don't just get to do it because you were good that time. You know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of really, really good broadcasters that are not doing this primetime game. I know they don't have the name recognition that Al Michaels does, but the whole point is that everything matters or it doesn't, right? So for me, I'm going, that was pretty terrible, but the play happened, and I'm more marveling at what the defensive player did, and I'm not as concerned about the broadcast. But I fully understand that guys like you, guys like Darius, and millions of people are, I don't want to say obsessed, because that's a negative connotation, but, like, very interested and care about that stuff a lot more than others, and I don't begrudge that.
Yeah, I think Dad is a good one to bring in, because he's got some of that broadcast nerdery like me. He can also straddle the fence and, I think, live the Danny Rea life a little bit, too. Where were you on last night, Darius, with Al Michaels?
I think that having a broadcaster stumble that way is definitely unfortunate. I love Al Michaels, but at the end of the day, I think you have to realize when it's not as good as it used to be. And this is where we are with Al Michaels. And I love the guy, but I just don't know how much longer he's going to be giving us this kind of content on the air.
I didn't realize either until I looked up his contract, this whole year-to-year thing.
Uh-huh.
You heard what I read, right? Mm-hmm. Like, it's unknown now exactly what he's making as he's gone year-to-year. He's always, it sounds like, done multi-year deals. He originally signed the 3-year deal with Prime. So that is interesting to me as well, that you're kind of in a mode now. And by the way, when he hangs up the microphone, he should be honored in an unbelievably
100%,
fun,
man.
Big way. This is one of the most important sports broadcasters in the history of American sport. I've read his biography. I love Al Michaels as much as the next guy. I mean, I think he called Reds games when he was like 23 years old or something crazy. Like, this dude's been at it for
legendary career.
60 years almost.
Yeah.
It's amazing. But the idea that you don't get to comment on anything the same way you would with any other broadcaster, if Kevin Kugler does something or if Ryan Radke does something or some other guy, it goes viral on Awful Announcing. But if Al Michaels does it, he's just a sacred lamb.
We sacred
can't
cow.
Say
no one says a word.
Come on, man. I don't know. I don't know if that's the way it should work. Grant and Danny on the Fan. Next, the run game. Cliff Kingsbury's got it cooking with this contribution by committee thing. Is this a situation where he shouldn't tweak anything because it's working, or should they try to find a higher ceiling by maybe giving somebody the ball more, riding the hot hand? You know, you had Chris Rodriguez rip off a long run and then go a long time without another carry. You have Ja'Cory Krosky Merritt averaging 6 a pop, and he's getting 6 or 7 carries a week. That's next on G&D.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And
yeah.
You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to Public Bar in D.C. and DuPont, Grant and Danny with you over in Northwest on 18th Street. We're here for another hour, so come on out. We're here until 6:30 on the Fan, looking ahead to a juicy weekend in football. We'll look at all the big matchups at each the college and NFL levels before we get out of here over the next 60. But we got to get to a couple of the things Dan Quinn had to say in his press conference today. We can go through these right now. First and foremost, it is official. Jaden Daniels will start on Sunday. I don't know how telling that is. Danny, we've all assumed since really the Rappaport report on Sunday that he was going to go. Rap sheet came out. NFL Network said that there was a workout on Saturday. He made some major strides. This was going back to last weekend, and that all systems would be go this week at practice. When he didn't miss any time at practice, I thought it was a formality, but it's official. Jaden Daniels will start, and here's what's interesting. Quinn actually did confirm he is going to be mandated by doctors, I guess, the training staff, to wear that big bulky brace that he practiced in today. So Daniels at the podium this week said he wasn't willing to answer the question, didn't really know. He said it'll be up to the doctors, haven't made that decision yet. Quinn says he will be wearing that big old brace.
Yeah. Oh, so now we enter into the territory again. What, you know, what exactly does that mean? It's 6 of 1, half dozen of the other. Depends on who you are. It's extra precaution, or it's because there's something that's not quite right there. He's not wearing a brace on his left ear, or his you know, left foot, or his ankle isn't extra wrapped. It's that knee brace, which tells you that it's because of something. Again, it's up to interpretation.
Well, it's not like he didn't just have an injury, right?
No, he did. But
we know that it was because of something.
Right. So, but does that mean he's himself, and he's wearing a knee brace in addition to that? Or is it like last year where he wasn't quite himself and he's getting wrapped up on the sideline like a mummy during every timeout because his rib was broken and he wasn't quite himself? I don't know, man, but we'll see what he looks like on Sunday. I really don't know what to expect. I'm hoping it's just the only hindrance itself is the brace, and it's just there for precaution.
So that's the bad news. The good news is Deebo Samuel was full go at practice today out in L.A. The heel, whatever this injury that he was dealing with for a couple days was, is no longer a problem. So he is expected to not only play but be at full strength, and there's no real concerns about his health. So that's a huge deal because you don't have McLaurin, you don't have Noah Brown. We've already talked about the fact that the wide receiver position is thinning for them, and the offense goes through Deebo. He's become a pertinent member of this offense. Frankly, a scarily important, a vital in a way that's uncomfortable for a guy with a long injury history. Not having him would feel like a devastating blow. I don't even want to think about that. My guess is, again, he won't return kicks. And I've said throughout the year, I know why they have him returning kicks. He's been great. He's number one in the NFL at kick returns. Number two is Luke McCaffrey, though. McCaffrey last week returned more yards worth of kicks, 199, than anybody for Washington since 2010, Brandon Banks. A lot of that had to do with how many returns he had. But he was also very effective at one of over 50 yards, as an example. So I think you let Luke return kicks. You keep Deebo on the sideline on special teams because you need him on the field at wide receiver as often as possible.
I'm with you. Yeah, the offense, especially this week. I'd like to see what it would look like if you had a fully armed and operational Terry McLaurin and Noah Brown for more than a quarter or something like that. And, you know, you had all your options available, make everybody cover everything. What things would look like with Deebo Samuel. But early on, it's been Deebo early, Deebo middle, and Deebo late, and he's returning kicks at a highly effective rate, kind of to your point. So, yeah, I mean, I'd expect a heavy dosage of him this weekend, right? You'd have to. He's been their most effective playmaker.
All right, let's hear from Dan Quinn going through some of these particulars, get the word from him. He named the captain for Sunday and recapped what has been a quirky week of practices. They decided to go out to L.A. a little early. We asked Jay Gruden about this in his Monday appointment. He said he was a big fan of just staying at his own facility, leaving as late as possible. That way it didn't affect your entire week, your workload leading up to the game. Quinn did it the opposite way, though. They went out there on Thursday night so that they could get a full Friday practice in, and then they'll have their walkthrough in L.A. tomorrow, try to adjust to the time difference. Here's what he had to say.
I'll give you some captains as we're heading into the game. So three guys, heavy hitters for us and all making their impact. So on offense, it would be Deebo. On defense, it would be J.K. And on special teams, it would be J-Mac. So three real guys, man, that were pumped, and we hit on the competitiveness all week, and they certainly fit to that. So hit the team all week, complimentary ball. I thought through a good week, and today was the culmination of that. Make sure we could hit all the spots that we wanted to hit. And so we're ready to get rocking, so glad to.
That was Dan Quinn from practice today. This was Quinn saying Jaden Daniels would play and talking a little bit more about the ramp-up they put him through this week to make sure he was right.
Thought he threw a great week. I'd kind of mentioned I thought he really, you know, put in the week over the last, and put in the time over the last few weeks to get himself to really push it. And you know, all the way even up to now, post-practice, you know, getting an extra couple small tweaks in to get exactly aligned like we want to. But he threw a good week, John.
And then lastly, here's where the knee brace was asked about and came up, and he confirmed that he will have to wear one and that that could, you know, obviously this is me editorializing, but it lead to him just being a little stiffer and having a different gait than normal.
I felt good. I had fresh eyes for all the days and all the things, but I felt good going into it based on what I saw from, you know, towards the end of last week. So I was optimistic.
Is that the brace he's going to wear that he was wearing today?
Yes.
Okay.
It's not small.
Nope. It's bulky.
But I think just look, all I got is like everybody else, the videos we see of practice. He can move. I always worry about the sliding, the bending, the getting down, just the awkward athletic stuff when you have a brace that makes you slightly less athletic. That's always going to be a concern in the back of my head. But I'm still taking the over 7.5 carries. I'll bet you it's 8 or 9 runs and he has over 50 rushing yards. Like if I have to guess, I don't think he's going to be some pocket passing statue because he's wearing a knee brace. And if that was the case, then they shouldn't play him, and it's a mistake to put him out there. I don't think they would, so I got to bet on him being Jaden Daniels.
So to me, I'm trying to find a way to quantify my nervousness about it. If, let's say for the sake of argument, at Madden rating style, his speed was in Madden terms was probably, what, an 85, 86, right? That's I think it's a decent way to put it. You think of like some of the fastest guys when they're really going, Tyreek Hill or you know Devin Achane or something, let's say they're 9,900. With that brace on, what's the loss in rating? What's the loss in quickness? What's the loss in explosion? Because it's a unit, but how much is it?
-5 on everything.
Is it -5? Is it -12? Is it -3? Is it, you know, certain faders are lower? And that's kind of my own point here. And then it's almost self-defeating in the sense that part of his ability to protect himself is the ability to get away, the ability to contort and maneuver and get in some semi-awkward spots to break that tackle or, you know, get out of the grasp of a defender, et cetera. Does he lose that ability now? So is he taking an extra hit because of it? You know, all these variables are sprinting through my mind as I, you know, again, have a little bit of PTSD when it comes to quarterbacks and knee braces here in this market. But, yeah, I mean, the hope is that he's, A, not compromised. This is precautionary, and he can still do all the things because the opportunity is there. The point we've been driving home all show against this Chargers defense and quarterbacks running the football, they don't mind giving that up, it seems.
No, they don't. All right, on Cliff Kingsbury, I tease this. I want to get to this. So the running game has been effective. They are running the ball really, really well. If you look at the numbers right now on offense in the NFL for rushing yards per play, the Commanders come in number 4 in the NFL at 4.98. In fact, when you look at each individual rusher, McNichols, because he only has a few carries and one of them was a 60-yarder, has a ton of yards per carry. I separate him a little bit. It's a little bit quirky. But both Rodriguez and Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt have been immensely effective and have done a really good job in 2 games for Rodriguez and 4 games for Bill. It's working. I'm not saying it isn't. And so whenever I bring up the idea of doing something different, everyone goes, no. Just let it ride. Nobody's gotten hurt. You know, everyone is going to last the whole season doing it this way. This could be the right way to do it. And I'm open to that possibility. I'm not screaming into a megaphone about this. But it is my nature. And this, I'll go down with this ship. Like, I'll be loud wrong occasionally on this. My way of balance is the Mike Leach way of balance of just divvying up touches to my best players. And when I have exceptional athletes, getting the ball in their hands. I have put Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt into that category beyond the players at his position. And so, while yes, Chris Rodriguez had that 48-yard run that was awesome, I wonder, what would that run have been with Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt? It was a really good play by Rodriguez, who I like a lot and have advocated for a few years. But it was a pretty much well-blocked, schemed-up, nice, patient, follow-your-blocks assignment kind of run. Could it have been 50 with Kroski-Merritt? Could he have bounced it back to the open field and hit a homer? I don't know. I just want to see more of him. Are you of the belief, Danny, that they should just not try to tweak something that has been effective for them? Or are you willing to see more JCM? Let's get into that next. I want to hear what you think, and we'll take your calls on that as well. 800-636-1067. They're the number 4 rushing team in terms of yards per run in the NFL. Stick with what you're doing because the plan's working, or more Bill? Which side are you on? This is The Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, they've all been playing at a high level. You know, Bill is exciting being a young guy. I think the sky's the limit for him as he continues to improve without the football. And then Chris is doing great things. When he touches it, you saw J-Mac against the Raiders had the huge run, and he's steady as they come. So I really like the three-man rotation we have going, and then we'll kind of see who gets hot as the season goes and where injuries take us and play it from there.
Cliff Kingsbury talking about his running back pecking order and the success Washington has had as a top five running team on the ground. They may meet their match this weekend with the Chargers. Welcome back to Public Bar in DuPont in D.C. G&D out and about on a Friday field trip and a football Friday on the Fan. All of our pigskin conversation comes your way via Paramount Plus. You can't count much, but you can always count on Sundays with the NFL on CBS and Paramount Plus. Watch your local NFL game live every Sunday all season long. Visit ParamountPlus.com/NFL to get started today. I understand any kind of nerves people would have about tinkering with the running game when it's working. Here's how I liken this too. You know, you and I are on this co-pair program where we're losing weight.
Uh-huh.
I'm down 36 pounds. You look really good. You're in great shape. You're very slender now. You're very muscular. You're doing very well for yourself.
Well, thank you.
If I have a week where I lose a few pounds, I could tell myself, I'll just do everything the exact same next week because I lost a few pounds. But if I know, well, I didn't work out that day or I didn't go for a walk, didn't get my 10,000 steps that day, I could still do more. You know, I could still try to lean into the things that I think were the reason for my success, knowing it wasn't a perfect week. That's how I view this running game. I'm willing to acknowledge to everybody, yeah, this is working.
Yeah, they lost 5 pounds. They could have lost seven.
Right. What if, though, the 15-yard run was 22 because their best running back had the ball. I want to see what it looks like when Ja'Cory Kroski-Merritt gets 17 carries. That's what I want to see. My guess is he's going to wear a team down with his physicality. He's going to turn a couple of 10s into 25s, and you're going to be more dangerous as an offense if he gets 14, 15, 16 touches. Now, someone might say, how do you know he could stay healthy for a full year doing that every week? And I don't. I can't promise you that that would be the case. But I'm also not condoning you have to do that every single week. I'm saying right now they're in a place with their weaponry and some of the guys missing where I think they need to lean into any explosiveness they have. Enter that guy.
I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth in 50 different ways here and contradict myself probably six times and argue with myself and then probably still somehow lose. So bear with me. I'm pretty sure they don't trust him that in the past game in a number of ways just yet. That's a huge factor for me. So I need, if he's going to be on the field, the full playbook armed and operational. I need the defense not to have any idea what's coming still. And they're spoon-feeding him. He's getting more and more looks, had a couple nice receptions this past week for double-digit yards, but, you know, nothing crazy. So I need to be able to trust him in pass pro before anything else happens. And I don't think they do, which means I don't yet either. That's number one. Number two, when I come in here on a Monday morning screaming at Scott Turner or any Jag offensive coordinator that shouldn't have the gig, when the offense stinks and the best players don't have the ball, I can't handle that. When the offense doesn't stink, I kind of don't really care where it goes. It can go to Chris Moore as long as it works. Now, it didn't work last week when he dropped the pass. But you know what I mean? Like, if the ball's moving and points are scored, first downs happen, I don't really get too upset about it in general, in that regard. The third point, which is going to contradict the first two, is if they asked me for my advice, I would go, yeah, I would turn the fader up on him right now. I would have more carries, more touches, more in your design. Even if you don't trust him to do all 700 pages of Al Saunders' playbook, find a way to trust him to do 100. You know what I mean? Find stuff if you have to invent it on the fly, write on a cocktail napkin, figure out a way to have that guy get the football, because you, the last point you made to me is the best one, Grant. They don't have any other options right now that are worth a damn. Debo Samuel's good. That's the list. Ertz is not dynamic. He's good for what he is, which is, well, you know, 8 yards, catch and fall.
The word is
he's
dynamic.
He's dynamic.
They don't have a dynamicism, they don't have weapons that are scary. They don't have an explosiveness is maybe the best word. The guy that can turn the 10-yard throw into an 80-yard touchdown, I don't know if that player is on the team. I think Debo could probably do that if you caught him. Perfect ball placement, you know, perfect defense where he's catching a crosser like old Odell Beckham Jr. stuff. But I don't know. I've seen him get hawked and run down from behind on a kick return. You know what I mean? I don't know if he's still got that in him or not. He's awesome. I love him. But I don't know if he's a 75, 80-yard home run hitter. I don't even know if Bill's that guy. We haven't really seen him in the open field. It's not like he's a 4.29 40 guy or something. But I do think when you lack explosivity like they do, that explosiveness needs to then be basically whatever you find, you need to tap into it as often as you can. And there's only a couple guys in this offense that I think give them that right now. That's all. I also like Rodriguez. I think there's a role for him. I'm using him. It's not like this is some demotion. By the way, that guy wasn't active for the first two games of the season. I would have had him.
Yeah,
active.
I wouldn't have done that.
But is there four or five or six carries for him, like has been the case for the most part? Sure. I'm probably going to run it a little bit more than they have. And that's where some of the carries are going to come from. And it's not like I'm asking – I'm not, you know, my uncle from 1993 asking for 30 carries either. We're talking about – this guy in week one had 10, and he hasn't sniffed that since. Let's do that again. You know, let's get him back. Some of that is converting third downs and running a lot of plays. But 10 to 12, 14 carries, that's not a big ask for a guy who's averaging 6 a pop. And by the analytical metrics at the position, like rushing yards over expected, forced tackles missed, you know, those types of things, EPA per play, he's one of the best running backs in the league. He's a top 5 running back in a lot of these areas. I just want to see what it looks like with more work. I don't think that's crazy.
No, it's not at all.
And I get the pass pro thing because it is a reality that they don't trust him. I would need to talk to Cliff about this so he could tell me why I'm dumb. I don't believe that A doesn't equal B, like that those things are are mutually binding. I think both can be true, that you can get him on the field plenty of snaps without it becoming a liability, and also it's not a tell every time he's out there. Teams do it all the time with young running backs. They just – they do. They figure that out. They're not the first team to not trust a running back in pass pro.
No, totally. Yeah, and I said that there are covers for it. There are ways around it. But you've heard Cliff mention this specifically. It's away from the ball. You know, it's like a shooting guard or a guard that's played point his entire life learning to play a shooting guard. How do you play off the ball? And that's kind of what Kingsbury's talking about here.
Well, definitely – we talked about it all week. I brought it up a few times. He 100% does not trust him in pass protection based on the subtle comments he's made.
Without a doubt. So I think at some point that needs to, you know, you got to have some trial by fire. You got to, you know, throw him out there and have him actually improve at it. I know, you know, at certain point, I'm sure he's working hard behind the scenes, and that's not a skill set he probably came into the NFL with, only having played one game last year because the NCAA stinks. You know, I'm sure didn't help him develop in that regard either. But yeah, it's the, there's got to be that fix. And I think the other point that you made that's a good one is, we don't know if he's going to hold up. He doesn't. He hasn't taken a lot of the bumps and the bruises. He's had a couple different things that have kept him out of practice once. Then in the training camp, he was slowed down a couple times. I wouldn't shoot for the full, you know, 14, 15 carry or touch threshold just yet. I would treat him like an Austin Ekeler 2.0, where I would go 10 total touches for him is kind of my soft cap. And if he's rolling in a game where we got to have it, sure, he goes to 12. I'm not going to put myself in prison for that, but that's kind of where I would shoot for now, just see how he handles that and how he bounces back and if I can keep him healthy.
When he was on the show with us, Ja'Cory Krosky-Merritt talked about pass protection and what kind of work he's putting in. He comes on every Tuesday, by the way, at 5 p.m., so if you haven't heard those segments, he's pretty personable and entertaining, funny young guy, and has been a lot of fun to have on. But we asked him about like getting better in that area, and he was – I thought pointed about the fact that it's so much more as a running back than just carrying the football. Because also, when you've done it your whole life, that's the thing that comes super easy. And I think he knows that's the separation for him right now between being able to get on the field consistently and get more snaps, and the snaps lead to the more carries. And where he is just that trust, you know, that Cliff Kingsbury just needs to know when I put you out there, you're going to hold up against that blitzing linebacker. Grant and Danny on the Fan next. Who's feeling the heat? And our Commanders spotlight, plus our final predictions as we take you up to 6:30. We're in the city today, out and about. We are out of the studio in DuPont at Public Bar. Come hang with us on the Fan.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly outside of Cleveland, think of the Browns, outside of Browns.
You know why it's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.